The National Broadcasting Company presents transcribed the American Forum, America's oldest unrehearsed discussion program. The subject of today's discussion will be the question, what has the 83rd Congress accomplished? Our speakers today are Representative John W. McCormick, Democrat of Massachusetts, Minority Whip of the House of Representatives, and member of the House Government Operations Committee, and Representative Hugh Scott, Republican of Pennsylvania, member of the House Rules Committee, a key figure in the Eisenhower campaign, and former chairman of the Republican National Committee.
Within a short time, the second session of the 83rd Congress will be concluded. There'll be the last-minute flurry of legislation, and then the members of Congress will be headed for home, leaving behind them the record of the 83rd Congress. And that record is what we're going to discuss today. We're pleased to have with us two veteran legislators, John McCormick and Hugh Scott. Let's start with the first question, Mr. Carson.
Congressman Scott, last September in the American Magazine, you wrote that the most stubborn resistance to Eisenhower's leadership has come not from the Democratic opposition, but from members of his own party in Congress. Now that the 83rd Congress is almost over, do you still feel that's true?
I think that article did a lot of good, as it changed the whole picture. As a result of some frank speaking on the part of a number of people, and I don't hesitate to include myself, the Republican Party in both the House and Senate has achieved a record of supporting the president far better and far more regularly and far more often than the Democratic opposition. As a result, in my judgment, the president is going to get four-fifths or more of the program for which he's asked.
Well, you think this change of heart is due to frank speaking and frank writing, or is it possibly some other pressure?
Well, I think it's also due to the fact that the president has made it quite clear that he intends to fight for his program. It's due to his leadership. It's due to the recognition that the popularity of the president is greater than that of any one man or any group of men in the country, that he has a good and desirable and a dynamic and a forward-looking program that the people want. The people are going to get it because the majority is going to give it to them.
Mr. McCormick, do you feel the president will get four-fifths of his legislation?
Why, of course not. And Congressman Scott, in his own mind, doesn't think so. As a matter of fact, we had a vote the other day on public housing, and over 75% of the Republicans voted against the very recommendation that President Eisenhower made. And 68% of the Democrats supported him. Well, we supported him because it's good Democratic measure. You see, President Eisenhower has not challenged any of the accomplishments of the Democratic Party of the last 20 years. And he's trying to improve upon them. And his opposition is from the Republicans, not from Congressman Scott personally, because he has progressive views, but from the old guard Republicans in the House and in the Senate, and they're still there. Now, we're going to take up Tuesday the mutual assistance appropriation bill. The Republican-controlled Appropriations Committee cut it down $800 million. We put through the supplemental appropriation bill the other day, and the president recommended $2 billion, and the Republican-controlled committee cut it down to $1.1 billion.
Hasn't President Eisenhower and the administration very strongly reversed the trend in government spending? Hasn't that been a complete reversal from what the Democrats have been doing for 20 years?
Well, I haven't seen any reversal except at the expense of our national defense.
But it's a reversal in the government spending, isn't it?
Do you approve of a weakening of our national defense?
The question is whether it's been weakened, isn't it?
Oh, it has been weakened. Last year, President Eisenhower fought for 120 Air Wing Group. We Democrats fought for 143 Air Wing Group. This year, the president recommends 137 Air Wing Group. He couldn't be right last year and right this year.
Congressman,
now they're cutting down the Army, and only this morning we find out they're changing their plans on that.
Go ahead, Mr. Scott. Yours is the party that even opposed a 70 Group Air Wing.
Now you're talking.
And not only that, you only built 44 Air Wings when you were caught in the middle of a war.
You're talking about years
ago.
You and I had the
colloquy on the floor the day we entered the war, and I told you that day at the microphone that I hoped you weren't entering that war too little and too late. You remember that?
Yes, but now, all right, and I oppose that. I oppose the reduction, as you will remember. But we're talking now in 1954, and you're not going to settle the problems of 1954 by discussing 1946 and 1947.
Mr. Scanlon.
Congressman Scott, during the 2 years that your party's had control of the Congress, you've warned us that our peril now, it's probably even greater than it was the time of Korea. Certainly, it's just as great. Yet during that period, we've witnessed you cut back the Air Force. We've witnessed you cut it back by $5 billion.
Let's get to the question, Mr. Scanlon.
We witnessed your cutting back the combat divisions. Now, I want to ask you, do you really count these among the accomplishments of the 83rd Congress?
What I count among the accomplishments of the 83rd Congress, Mr. Scanlon, are these: that we have not cut back, but increased the overall national defense. We have increased the technical competence of our military. We have our entire posture of defense under the head of a man who knows what he's doing and how to go about it.
You mean Mr. Lovett didn't know what he was doing?
More than that, no, Mr. Scanlon, you ask the question, I'll answer it.
Go ahead, man.
More than that, we have reduced the cost of government. We have reduced the number of people on the payroll. We have maintained the economy. And for the first time in more than 15 years, no guns shoot anywhere in the world. And part of that, I think we can be proud to say, was the ending of the Korean War.
Well, no gun shooting in the world. I wonder if Congressman Scott approves of the agreement made in Indochina and if he thinks that's trotwood.
Go ahead, Congressman. You tell us what you think of the Indochinese agreement, and I'll follow you with my views. You brought it up.
Well, I asked you a question now. I asked you the first question. Now, you answer it, and I'll follow up.
You tell us what you think about it, and I'll be glad to comment on it.
You're caught, and I know your tricks.
I'll answer it. I will answer it, provided you will answer it after me.
Well, I have definite views on the matter.
All right, my views are these. This was an uneasy and an unsatisfactory truce in which we did not join. It was an agreement which has brought an end of shooting in the world. It was an agreement in which the British and the French believe that you could do business with the Reds. I do not believe that you can do business with the Reds, but the fact remains that there is no shooting in the world today, and if the Korean War were still going on, which began in your administration, Congressman, there would be shooting in the world today. Now, you tell me what
you think. Mr. McCormick, you go ahead.
Now, on the Korean administration, a Korean conflict, President Truman had the guts to make his own decision as commander-in-chief. He had the courage.
He had the courage acting as commander-in-chief.
There's a truce made that could have been made, a far better truce any time a year, year and a half prior to the time the truce was made. As a result of it, the Chinese Reds were relieved of their commitments in North Korea, and they're able to drive down into Indochina and help the communist forces in Indochina. Now, coming to the Indochina truce...
You think the war should have continued, Congressman?
Hold on a minute now.
We're not agreed with that, satisfied with that. I'm satisfied that England and France has some kind of deals on that are not for our best interest. I'm suspicious of England and France in connection with what's going on. I think you and I probably would agree pretty much in that respect. I'm very suspicious about this increase in trade, which Mr. Stassen has permitted to go on.
Now, before you change
the communist bloc as a peace gesture.
Before you change the subject, is there any shooting war going on anywhere in the world today? Which was my statement.
Do you think there's peace in the world today? There certainly is not peace in the world today. All I know is that there's a couple of million more unfortunate people in Vietnam who are now under the communists. About a million of them happen to be communicants of the Catholic Church, of which you and I are also communicants, and I can imagine what kind of rough living they're going to have under the communists when they consolidate, the liquidation process they're going to go through. And I hope that there'll be a good pact established down there that will be able to stop the communists. But I'm fearful that there'll be extreme difficulty in that respect. I'm hopeful, and I will join in a bipartisan way in any efforts that will bring about a pact in Southeast Asia that will stop the communist onrush.
Now, you and I have no argument on that. We're both for Southeast Asia pacts. Let's put ourselves back in the hands of
Mr. Nillis, you go ahead.
Mr. McCormick, in the two Congresses that the Republicans have controlled, they've reduced taxes on both occasions. In every Congress that the Democrats control, they increase taxes. Now, how can you go to the people and ask them to put a Democratic Congress back in and not have them expect another tax increase?
Well, now, you're talking on a tax increase.
Decrease.
We can go tax increase or decrease. We can go to the party on the campaign promises made. I can remember one, the Great Crusade. Where is it? I can remember another Republicans made, the liberation of enslaved peoples. Where is that promise?
But, sir,
I'm
answering this in my own way, young man. I can remember the agonizing reappraisal. That was directed towards France, but we're going through an agonizing reappraisal in the United States. I can remember the instant and massive retaliation. I can remember the new military look. I can remember the promise of greater prosperity and lower living costs. I can remember the hard money policy in the last 14 months has been an easy
can
money policy.
You ever remember
policy.
When the Democratic Party
now,
reduced
on taxes? On taxes, I think it's indefensible for this Congress to reduce taxes in the world of today. If the President of the United States recommended stronger national defense and a continuance of the taxes that expired last December and expired in the early part of this year, I think it would have been for the best interests of our country, and I said that on the floor of the House. My viewpoint is we made a serious mistake in reducing taxes. If it was coupled, if an extension of the taxes were coupled with a stronger national defense instead of weakening our defense.
Let me just briefly comment on this, that Mr. McCormick has taken the standard conventional Democratic position, which is that we will not reduce taxes, we will never have reduced taxes under the Democrats. It's just not possible to do it, and it never has been, and historically it never can be, because you are the party of spend and tax.
Mr. Krebs, go ahead.
Yeah, but the people, there weren't 4 million out of work. The people had confidence when the Democrats were in control. They had not the fear that existed at the present
time. Under this
administration. Mr. Krebs has a question.
Let's return to something Congressman Scott said a little bit ago. He said that President Eisenhower has, in the second session, fought for his legislative program. I wonder then what happened to the foreign trade program that still is bottled up in the House Ways and Means Committee and which the President has not fought for. Wasn't that a major policy
on the
that
contrary,
you agreed on?
On the contrary, Mr. Krebs, the President has fought for his foreign trade program. And he has gotten not all he wanted, and certainly not all that the low-tariff people wanted, but neither have the high-tariff people prevailed. What you have is a continuance of reciprocal trade and an adoption by the President and the Congress of a trade not aid program in our dealings abroad. There are many people who would have preferred more than a mere one-year extension of reciprocal trade, but we have not walked backwards. And as Chief Justice Warren said in the famous segregation case, I'm a slow walker, but I never walk backwards.
I have an observation to make on that. Now, you remember last year, they extended the reciprocal trade agreement, the Hull Reciprocal Trade Agreement law, 1 year. And Secretary Dulles made a promise to the Ways and Means Committee that during the year they'd negotiate no agreements. Fantastic. This year, the President sent up the Randall Report. He's going to fight for it. Now, the Randall Report included many things, but one of them was a three-year extension. Then later, the President came out and said he was going to fight for a three-year extension of the Hull Reciprocal Trade Agreement law. What do we get? 1 year. And then at that, far more Republicans voted against it than Democrats. The Democrats overwhelmingly supported it because it's good Democratic measure.
Mr. Scott.
Did you ever get more than a 1 year extension during your majority leadership?
Yes, we did.
We got two years.
Yes.
All right. We have a question here. Mr. Brown, we haven't heard from you.
Is in the Congress on that.
Congressman McCormick, the Republican administration claims it has stopped the 20-year trend toward centralization in federal power in federal government.
Federal power, you hope you keep to that.
Yeah, that is the greater
because
federal
the lobbyists
power.
Have been the lobbyists for private power now, are just flooding this city and have been.
Come back to that isn't the point of my question.
Go ahead, Mr. Brown.
I'm speaking of centralization of power in the central government, in the federal government. They say they have stopped that 20-year trend. Can you, as a representative of the Democrat Party, point to any instances where your party has reduced centralization of power in government?
Well, the question of centralization of power was purely a political issue. Under the Democratic Party, the question of states' rights was considered just as thoroughly and as effectively as under the Republican Party. The application of it somewhat varied in some respects. You want to remember 1932, during the depths of the Depression, there were very few people thinking of state rights. It was a question of saving the country against the economic depression. Now, the question of control in the central government is mainly in the political field. One of those political charges that the Republicans played upon during the years and within the political field, I disagree with them, but I, It was a good political issue.
Can you point to any instance, Congressman, where they have stopped?
Why, we
centralization of power in the federal government.
We put through the Social Security Act, didn't we? In the Democratic Party.
Is that rolling it back?
It was a federal-state relationship. We put through the unemployment compensation. It's on the state level. We put through the highway legislation has always been pretty consistent in both parties. The amount of authorization and appropriations might vary, but it's always been the federal-state cooperation. And during the war, you have to have more centralized government in the federal government than you do during peace times.
Both parties,
in the overall picture, having in mind the conditions that existed, both parties have respected states' rights.
May I just comment very briefly?
McCormick has a question.
Very briefly on that simple statement. The Democratic Party never gives any money back to the people, and it never gives any powers back to the people, never gives any rights back to the people, but occasionally, especially in the 1930s, you did pass some very good Social Security legislation.
Well, that's a very sweet remark in your part. The fact is that the Democratic Party took this country over when it was in this bankruptcy.
You took it over.
And it led the country to success. It took control of the country and led it to success.
Mr. Scanlon.
We haven't got it over now where everything's going to big interest.
Congressman Scott, in view of the opposition which Senator McCarthy and has leveled against this administration on occasion, do you think the administration, and I especially mean the President Eisenhower, would be wise to endorse candidates like Meek of Illinois, who openly endorse Senator McCarthy and in return are endorsed by the senator? Aren't they cutting their own throats if they do a thing like that?
My personal judgment is that the administration will indicate its support of candidates who have supported it and who are willing to pledge support to it in the forthcoming session of the Congress. I assume that the same thing happens as happens in the Democratic Party. Those matters are decided on a statewide basis and on a local basis.
Well, might I say, if they proceed upon the first theory of supporting those who supported the president, they won't be supporting many Republican members of the House.
As a matter of fact, in view of the fact that the House of Representatives has passed every bill in one form or another which the president has set up, except about three, the health insurance,
That's reinsurance.
And perhaps two others are about all of the president's program, which has not gone through the House of Representatives. As Congressman McCormick knows, we're in our traditional position of waiting for the Senate to catch up with us.
Mr. Kaiser.
Congressman McCormick, just a while ago you mentioned about the liberation policy which had been previously advocated by the Republicans. Do you think there's possibility for bipartisan support for a real liberation policy? By that, I mean a policy whereby we try to help these people who are enslaved by communism to overthrow their communist rule.
Mr. Kaiser, bipartisan should exist in the world of the day on all matters relating particularly to foreign affairs, international activities. And addressing myself particularly to your question and giving you the benefit of my views, whatever value they might be, and to those who are looking and listening in, we first have to hold back communism and then start to roll it back. The question of liberation would mean we'd have to go immediately to war to liberate. Now, the American people wouldn't do that. So what is the next best policy to try and bring those unfortunate people in the dominated satellite nations of communist-dominated nations, their liberty and their freedom again, is to hold back and then roll it back. And that's a question that addresses itself to all of us as human beings and as Americans, and Democrat or Republican doesn't enter into that.
No, it doesn't, except that the Republicans have been somewhat more successful in doing it.
Well, that's a question of fact.
Congressman Scott, I
won't get into that because we could argue that matter, and we'd get involved in a situation where no good would come out of it.
Mr. Brown.
Congressman McCormick, do you support the administration's program for flexible price supports? Do you think
it's realistic? I voted for the 90% support.
And the high cost of living
That's a very wise observation.
And a true
one. No, it isn't.
Gentlemen, Senator, do you approve of the... how can you justify that in view of the fact that it takes $700,000 per day to store this surplus material?
And another point, if you can answer them both together, assuming that you're for free enterprise, why do you back a program which knocks out the laws of supply and demand, which are the very backbone of the free enterprise system?
Well, now that involves a question that would take a long while to answer. In the first place, I think you will admit that agriculture is a very important segment of American society. I think you will admit that agriculture is not only an important segment, but important from the angle of national defense. I think you will admit that agriculture buys in the protected market and sells its surplus in a world market, which means in a free market. I think you will admit that business has subsidies in the nature of tariffs. That's a subsidy, whether you want to call it or not, and I'm not arguing against it. We have the farm. Unless we do something to meet this from a national angle to give compensatory considerations to the farmer, then you're going to go through the process of liquidating.
Aren't you following
a very important segment of our society?
Well, Congressman.
Now, the question of surpluses, that's a very important question. That's another question that Congress should consider in itself. I voted for the Bannon Plan, which would have met that solution, which was a trial for 1 year. We're doing it now in the case of wool. Went through here only a few weeks ago in the House where the Bannon Plan is applied to wool. Now, your question of surplus is a very pertinent question, but that is separate and distinct from the question of support prices. It should be met by itself, and it can be met by itself, where the law of supply and demand will apply in the ordinary markets of our
country.
In discussing this whole question, gentlemen, there's no question that the price supports play a major role in the farm problem. And I want to make this
point. The fact is, the Republicans have violated their campaign promises in relation to the farmers.
Well, I have seen the Democrats time and again, especially from the cities, the big cities of the country, one of which you represent, Congressman, vote for flexible supports and lower price supports. But this time, you went down the line virtually as a block. You may call it supporting the president, but you voted against his program. You voted to raise the cost of living to every consumer in every place in America by this high price support program, and I don't see how you can justify
it. Well, I challenge that statement because the facts don't support it.
It would take another half an hour to answer it,
exactly.
Probably. But I have one other question
just
to ask
you. Just another one of those little demagogic arguments.
No, it's not demagogic to the housewife who has to pay more for butter because of your vote, Congressman.
Well, my vote.
Would have to pay more.
The butter situation has been taken care of. Dairy in the last bill, you know that, and a limited form of the Bannon Plan was provided for
bread.
In the last bill. You voted against the Bannon Plan, didn't you?
I will always vote against
the
Bannon Plan.
Of course you will.
Yes, sir.
While we're talking about this farm problem, in the current issue of Look magazine, on sale this week at newsstands, there's an interesting article on the Dust Bowl story. And it points out, among many other things, that government policies have encouraged overproduction and helped make the Dust Bowl. Now, do you feel, Congressman McCormick, that there's a good basis for this in having rigid support, say, on wheat at $2 plus a bushel, that sort of thing? Has that been a major factor in causing
the dust settle?
Of course not.
You don't feel so?
Well, of course not. Remember, we had the Dust Bowl back in the 30s, a large area that stretched through a very important part of our country. It was a serious problem. You have a serious situation in certain sections of the country now due to weather, which is an act of God. That's a problem, conservation, that's going to be with us. More or less at all times. It's a problem today. It'll be a problem 50 years from now.
Mr. Carson.
Congressman Scott, a few minutes ago we were talking about taxes, and you said that the Democrats have never reduced taxes. Doesn't look as if they will. And the Republicans have been doing it. Isn't it true that in the House, it was on a practically a straight party vote that an amendment to grant an increase in the personal exemption was defeated because of united Republican opposition? Supported by the Democrats?
What is a fact is simply this, that the Republican Party made a $28 average tax reduction, 10% to everybody in America.
Let me make it.
We've ordered three tax reductions this year. We've ordered all the tax reductions we thought the economy would stand. We voted excise tax reduction, 10% tax reduction, and a tax revision bill, which has gone from the Senate, as I understand it, to the President. We've passed on all these reductions to the people. Now, what happens every time we vote a tax relief bill? The Democrats come in who have never voted a tax relief bill and said, we'll give back more to the people than you will, knowing perfectly well but they never gave anything.
Yes, well, the bill you passed was one that took care of only those small groups, and we were fighting for a distribution among the people, and you know
it. I'm sorry, gentlemen, I must interrupt. I wish we could continue, but our time is up. Sorry very much. Our speakers today have been, and we thank them very much, Representative John McCormick, Democrat of Massachusetts, and Representative Hugh Scott, Republican of Pennsylvania. Thank you very much, gentlemen.